Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Connecticut, apparently, where it's illegal to even go. Nikki's going to share that story, but we started out, as I said earlier, with a scarier story, which is one about the CBDC, the central bank digital currency that has launched in Jamaica. And the Financial Times having a story about it. Not so big as far as adoption is concerned, below 10%. Of Jamaicans have loaded up their Jam Dex, as it's called, the Jam, J-A-M-D-E-X, which they say, no cash, no problem. That's apparently the tagline for this. They are one of four, according to the Financial Times, leaving out China for some reason, one of four countries. Oh, okay, maybe they're qualifying this by saying it is quote-unquote, fully launched, because China is fully launched across the whole country. But apparently Bahamas has a CBDC, the Eastern Caribbean has one, Nigeria has one, and now Jamaica, where $357 million Jamaican dollars were spent in 2022 on their Jamdex, the CBDC, but that is just a small fraction of the $4.7 trillion Jamaican dollars in electronic retail transactions for that year. So then we got into the question of, well, you know, why aren't people picking up on this yet? And, well, first of all, you have to have some place to actually spend the CBDC, and there's been a lack of merchant sign-up. So this year, the finance ministry announced that they've got incentive programs where they're going to try to bribe people to sign up for the CBDC. In the case of small and micro merchants, they're offering upwards of 10,000 locations, food stores, gas stations, hair salons, you know, that kind of thing, with 25,000 Jamaican dollars, which is about $164. So if you're running a business, and Matt, you're a businessman, somebody comes to you, a sales guy comes to you, he wants you to start accepting this new payment system, ignoring that it's a CBDC, let's say it's not that, and he says he's willing to pay you $164, to get on board with this, is that going to incentivize you? You're going to take a serious look at it.
I would look at it, but I would be curious as to why anybody would want to pay me to use something that it seems like they should be selling me.
Indeed. And in this case, they're also going to be offering a wallet holder individual loyalty program, which will give loyalty points redeemed for cash back to the individual users. So that's what they have to do. They've got to convince the business owner to sign on, and they got to convince the individual users to sign on. It's kind of a chicken or the egg problem. This is something similar to what the credit card companies encountered early on, right? Because like the credit card sales guy would be beating the streets, knocking on pushing pavement, knocking on doors, and going into businesses and saying, trying to explain to a business why they should adopt this entirely new system when cash has been working fine for decades. Why would someone want to pay 3% to take this plastic card on when no one's asking to? None of their customers are asking for it. So why would they take it? So it's like, how do you start getting people to accept a new payment system? It's not easy. And the cryptocurrency world has been experiencing this as well, right? Like, how do you get local business owners to accept something that, honestly, their customers aren't clamoring for? And the answer is the customer should clamor for it a little bit. That's what we found here in Keene, New Hampshire, which had at one time, and I think may still hold the title for most crypto-accepting businesses per capita in the United States.
If I'm wrong about that, please let me know. But I think we still have it, even though we've lost a few since the FBI raided our studio and some of our friends' houses a few years ago, and things have kind of fallen off the radar a little bit since then, plus the price of the crypto has gone down, and it's a little harder to sell crypto when the price has been going down as opposed to going up. But we found that it is easier to get businesses on board when you have a network of people, a marketplace, a community, some economic strength, people that are actually willing to spend cryptocurrency. When they go into a local business that they are a customer of, because it's a whole other story if you're a total stranger, a sales guy coming into town, going knocking on doors, talking to people you've never met before. And it's another story if you are the local who's a regular customer or even an irregular customer, somebody that they're going to recognize. And you say, hey, are you taking Bitcoin yet? Or are you taking cryptocurrency here yet? And the answer is going to be no. But if it's the owner of the business, he or she may make a mental note. And then the next time somebody else asks, they may say to themselves, you know, maybe this is worth looking into. And that's actually happened here. Mm-hmm. That's how it happened with Wilder Auto, which is the company in town that takes crypto or took crypto. He says he hasn't had anyone ask to pay in over a year with cryptocurrency. I'm not allowed to.
I would, but I work on my own cards.
Yeah, under my bail conditions, I'm not allowed to. And he's got some issues that he needs to get worked out with wallets and stuff like that. So, again, it just goes to show when the customers aren't using, the business owner is going to fall away. And, unfortunately, that's the reality of it. So you have to have a community of people who's willing to spend. That will convince the business owners to come on board, but the people who are willing to spend have to actually spend. They have to actually show up, whether it's good times or bad times, whether the price is up or down. The cryptocurrency community needs to keep coming out, and that's the real tricky part. So anyway, they're encountering the same thing with the CBDC because they haven't done the thing that you would expect governments to do, which is use the club. To use the threat of violence against these companies to say, you must accept the CBDC. If you don't accept the CBDC, you're going to prison. And that all of a sudden will get people on board, right? But they haven't done that yet. They're still trying to use the carrot instead of the stick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they're at here. That's why they're trying to bribe people. So we had talked about, like, well, what will the United States government thugs do here when the CBDC comes to the U.S.? Now, to be clear, it hasn't been approved for the U.S. yet. They've just been doing experiments. It's possible it won't ever happen. But is it likely?
I mean, anything's possible.
Yeah. Is it likely that it won't happen? It seems more likely that it's going to happen because it gives them more power, gives them more control over the money system.
Could you imagine going cashless?
No.
And that's exactly what they're all trying for. They want to be cashless because why would a government, you know, what they're going to tell people, that, well, it's costly to print money and it's costly, you know, the printing presses cost money. We have to maintain them.
Well, we know what it really is, you know, a lot of people.
They want the control.
Yeah,
they want to be able to spy on every transaction. Could you imagine?
And stop transactions.
You know, you want to go, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, just literally halt transactions from occurring so you can't trade. Could you imagine wanting to go out on a date with your wife? Mm-hmm. So you need a babysitter. There's a 15-year-old girl up the street that wants to babysit for you, says it all the time. So you call her up, and you have to pay her with central bank digital currency. And now, at the
she's
end
unlicensed.
Of the year, she's unlicensed, and B, you got to send her a 1099 so she can be properly taxed. Could you imagine having to send a 1099 to the little kid that shovels your driveway when it snows?
It's crazy.
Yeah, and that's why it's important for us
exactly
to have.
That's exactly what they'll do.
Well, that's why it's important for us to have alternative forms of currency.
Right.
So not just hoarding cash, gold backs, crypto. Silver, things that, like, even physical things that you can trade with people that are valuable.
And they can't control it.
Right.
Exactly.
And this is what we're talking about here is a perfect example of how obsolete not only government, but the banking system is just super archaic and obsolete.
Oh, yeah.
But the people who are in control of it and have enjoyed the luxury of being in possession of all that power for generations are now realizing that they're in trouble from this cryptocurrency thing. Mm-hmm. They don't have a natural monopoly. This is a monopoly they can really enforce with a stick and a gun all the time, because once, you know, like I said, the genie's out of the bottle, it's only a matter of time. When they raided us, They had a lot of questions for me about Monero. They were, I know they rated about Bitcoin, but they didn't ask me anything about Bitcoin. They wanted to know everything I could tell them about Monero, though. Why are you asking? You know, what's the big deal?
Were you wearing that shirt?
No, I was wearing an Edge Wallet shirt. Because one of the agents comes in, and I'm handcuffed to a chair, and I'm being, not hostile, but obstinate. Yep. And he goes, so you like Edge Wallet? He's the only one that caught me off guard out of all of them. I was like, how do you know I like Edge Wallet? He goes, you're wearing the shirt. So I was like, there was a little levity in that right, moment there. The Monero thing in particular, how they behaved about Monero, and they asked me, why do you like Monero so much? And I said, because it keeps the business of people like you, or it keeps the noses of people like you out of the business of people like me.
Right.
And they all just shut them down. Like, that was all they needed to hear. And I think they kind of knew that was the reality. And there ain't a whole lot that they can do about that.
Too bad.
You know? Yeah, so that's why I'm wearing a Monero shirt right now. I ordered 7 pairs of Monero socks for my wedding, but they didn't get there in time for my groomsmen to wear. You know, I take this seriously. I want people to know about Monero for these reasons. If the powers that be are that afraid of Monero, then we're over the target.
Indeed, you don't take flack unless you're over the target,
right.
Which is true. But I got to give them credit. This is a pretty creative idea, because the idea of giving loyalty points for people spending in this CBDC. Because we were trying to figure out, like, what are they going to do to, you know, use the carrot to try to get people to sign up. And what I had thought of originally was that they're going to use welfare. And I think they will.
They may,
Like tax returns, welfare, any kind of payout that you're going to get from the government, they're going to say, well, you can have it now. If you just sign up for our CBDC wallet, and there it is, right? Or maybe they'll come up with like a UBI, a universal basic income, but that only pays out if you take the CBDC, right?
Yeah.
So those kind of incentives. But also, this is a good idea to give people loyalty points that can then be redeemed for cash back, whatever that means, a discount, I presume, on future purchases. That is smart because it sort of echoes what some of the cryptos have done. Remember, we had Dash back here in Keene a few years ago, where the Dash decentralized autonomous organization had approved the guys at AnyPay, which was a payments platform, still is, a payments platform that all the businesses in the area were accepting payments on, crypto payments, and they were giving up to... Was it 5% or something? It was a certain amount.
I remember that.
Whenever you bought something with Dash, you would get an instant payback in your wallet. Like, you'd pay for the thing that you were going to pay for with Dash, and then within seconds, you'd get a refund, like an instant rebate, essentially.
From Dash, right?
Effectively it was from Dash, but it came from AnyPay, because they got paid by the Dash DAO to do this. And it absolutely incentivized people to go out there and spend Dash, in the same way that Dash Direct was incentivizing people to spend Dash. If you can give people a discount, this is like what you were talking about, when you're going to sell food at the Porcupine Freedom Festival and maybe ForkFest next year, you're going to give a discount, significant discount, for people who are paying cryptocurrency, and an even deeper discount for people paying a Monero. So it sounds like they may be doing something similar with the CBDC, and that may incentivize some people to get on board with this. But the question is, how much can they do with the carrot before they have to utilize the stick? And that we have not yet really seen put into place yet. I mean, maybe so in China. I'm not sure what level of coercion they're using to get people to use the Chinese CBDC at this point. So we'll reserve comments on that one. But, you know, in Nigeria, for instance, there was a story several months ago about what they were doing, which seemed like maybe a sneak attempt to try to force the CBDC without actually, quote-unquote, forcing it. What they did there was they announced that they were going to change out the designs of the Nigerian Naira, the physical currency. So I think it was like, you know, 5s, 10s, 50s, whatever, 100, whatever the denominations were. And they announced that the 3 most expensive denominations, which weren't worth a lot in the U.S., but, you know, the most expensive Nairas, we're going to be changed out. So you're going to exchange your Naira physical for new physical Naira. And if you don't, then the old stuff isn't going to work anymore.
Right. I remember that.
You're going to be telling the businesses, look, you can't accept We're not going to, the banks will not accept the old Naira past this date. So therefore, the businesses wouldn't accept the old Naira because they couldn't take them to the bank. They wouldn't be worth anything. So there was these deadlines that the central bank put in place.
And wasn't there mayhem after that?
Total mayhem. People were out in the streets destroying bank buildings, destroying bank frontages, destroying ATMs.
Yeah, the bankers, like the bank employees were locking themselves in the bank.
Some of them were running out the back door, putting ladders up over the walls with barbed wire and trying to run out the back while these people are like throwing firebombs in the the front entrance and just totally destroying the place.
What are people going to learn? You should not be working for these evil institutions.
But the reason they were so mad wasn't because of the trade out per se. It was because the government botched it. Now, here's how they botched it. Now the question is, did they do this on purpose or was it just bureaucratic incompetence? So what they did was they said, well, you got by this date, you're going to have this window. I don't know if it was like a month or 2 months. It wasn't that long, a quarter of a year or something like that. You've got this window of time in which you can take all your cash that you've got stored in your mattress, because these are Nigerians. They're not banked generally as a populace, right? They don't have a bank account, a lot of them, a significant amount of them. 40% of them don't have bank accounts, something like that. Very high number. So they know they're holding cash. They know they're storing cash. And so this was an excuse to get cash or bankless people to come into banks to get an account, to exchange their Naira old style for the new style. Thing is, the banks didn't have enough cash to turn over. So you got lines of people who are angry because they know this cash is going to run out of date, essentially, and there won't be any good. They won't be able to spend it anywhere. And they're being told, well, we're sorry, we're out of the new stuff. We don't have any new stock. And so these people were like, F this, and they just took to the streets and just started destroying the banks. I mean, it was crazy to watch some of the videos of some of the destruction that was going on there because of this. But so, like, the question is, did they do that on purpose, because they ended up extending the deadline, because they...
Well, they're going to have to,
Well, because people couldn't buy anything anymore. Because the businesses were like, well, we can't take this to the bank, so we're not going to take this old stuff. Well, this is all I have. I can't take it to the bank either. How am I supposed to buy my groceries? So it was a really crazy situation. I haven't heard any updates on it. So if you know what's been going on in Nigeria, and so this is what they're doing with the cash. They're telling people you got to exchange your cash or else it's going to run out of date. So were they doing this to secretly say, well, you could have the CBDC that we have here and then you don't have to deal with all this cash exchange. Hey, how about this? You could take your your cash that you have, and instead of getting new cash, we'll just give you the CBDC instead. You know that was happening. That had to be happening. Like, oh, sorry, we're sold out of the new cash, but we do have this CBDC over here. It's just as good. How about you take that?
And even today, a lot of people don't even use cash anymore. Mm-hmm. It's becoming rare that you'll find somebody with cash in their wallet, because a lot of people that just work those regular W-2 jobs get the direct deposit into their bank account, use their debit card, and use a credit card, and that's it.
Do you see that with your friends as well?
Some of them, yeah. Mm-hmm. It depends, too. So, like, I used to waitress and bartend, and my friends who still do that kind of work,
you're getting cash
in. You always have cash.
Right. So that makes sense. That makes sense there. But the one of the guys with Goldback, the company that makes Goldback, goldback.com is their website. They're not a sponsor, but I really love what they do.
Yeah, they're great.
Highly recommend them. He was giving a really interesting speech last year at the Porcupine Freedom Festival where he explained that what they're doing to young people is they're essentially getting them on these cards early on. Like as soon as, I guess, some parents can have a debit card issued to
their
kids
names,
or whatever.
And then kind of use it and start to build up their credit score early on.
I don't think that would build credit, but if you're...
Oh, a debit card. I've heard people do it with credit cards as well.
Okay, maybe so. But the idea of getting the plastic card in their hand, he points out that this is bad because whenever you go and you pay with a card, how many times are you actually pulling up... Let's say it's a debit card. Mm-hmm. So how many times do you actually pull up your bank account or your PayPal balance or whatever the issuer is and check your balance before you swipe the card?
Yeah, not all. I mean, I don't.
Very rarely, right?
Yeah. I just assume there's enough money in there.
Right. And so what he pointed out was that essentially we're training the youth of America
to just spend.
Just spend. Yeah. And the real key that he, the key point he made was, is if you're spending with a card, you don't have the feeling of loss that's the same as actually...
it's a real physical thing that you're losing. Yeah, or trading, rather.
Right? You're pulling cash out of your purse or your wallet. You're counting it out. You're handing it over. And maybe getting some change back or whatever.
Yeah.
That whole process is gone.
Yeah. No, and there is something important, I believe, in counting out the money for you to fully understand how much money you're spending. And I knew when I was waitress, it was almost a lot easier for me to budget. Because I would have a set amount of money in my wallet. The rest would go to the bank or the safe or wherever I'm putting it.
Right.
Because obviously you don't want to spend all the money you're making. And when you're a waitress, it's pretty much all tips.
Yeah.
So I would say maybe like, you know, here's $500 for the week, whatever. And
you
I knew exactly
what you had.
I knew exactly what I had.
Right.
And when it was gone, it was gone. But with the debit card, you know, depending on how much money you're keeping in your checking account, you can just spend, overdraft your account. Sometimes it just lets you, and it is, like, becoming really toxic because, I mean, people, a lot of kids these days, they don't know how to balance a checkbook. They're not keeping order of their finances, and it's kind of by design because with the credit cards, and, you need your credit score, and you need to build credit, it is creating a culture of just being in debt. Like, it's normal to be in debt. It's normal to have hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loans.
Yeah.
It's normal to not pay off your credit card at the end of the month and have credit card debt. You know, it's normal to finance a car, and all of these things are very normal in our culture with previously. Do you think people were getting mortgages like 200, 300 years ago? Probably not. You know, you kind of just...
You could buy a house for a few thousand dollars, I mean, 100 years ago.
You know?
But you're absolutely right about that. And so it is a and these are bad financial habits that you're talking about. And so
absolutely.
So people spending from these debit cards and credit cards, they're not checking balances. They don't know how much they have. They don't really know how much they're losing. And that's what the kids, quote unquote, kids today don't understand, is that if they've never handled cash, then they don't have the same feeling of, I'm spending something. There's something, an amount is being deducted. I do not have as much as I had before. It just doesn't have the same hit.
For some kids, it's like it's almost not even real money. You know, they get a credit card, maybe, you know, whatever, like $2,000 limit. They almost feel like it's free money. And it's unfortunate because it seems like their parents are failing them in a way, not teaching them these financial skills. But I see a lot of, you know, people in their 40s and 50s and 30s who are in a lot of debt. So it's, you know, it's kind of being passed down generation to generation where it's just normal to be in debt. It's normal to live beyond your means because you can just charge it to the credit card.
That's the American
way. I'll pay it off when I can pay it off. Well, guess what? You're getting charged monthly for the amount of money you have on that credit card. So it's not free money.
Nope.
People are spending a lot of money in those fees.
They don't want you to get out of that debt. They want you to stay in that debt. They want you to keep paying
the fees.
Despite less than stellar results from places that took an early plunge, CBDCs are continuing their shaky march. The Bank for International Settlements recently surveyed 86 central banks, of which 93% of them have engaged, quote-unquote, with digital currencies. The broad category includes central banks which have carried out research, like New Zealand or the U.S., and are developing a CBDC, like the European Central Bank, piloting one, like China. We can tell you a little bit more coming up, plus the ghost town on the way.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to GCNfood.com. GCNfood.com.
USA News Update. Jason Aldean says critics have gone too far attacking his new song, Try That in a Small Town. The music video shows mixed footage of BLM protesters confronting police, burning the American flag, and random robberies. That's drawn criticism. Aldean says the song is about taking care of neighbors regardless of race or religion. Two huge blockbuster films are expected to rake in major cash at the box office this weekend.
Greta Gerwig's Barbie is projected to make between $95 and $110 million in its debut. Meantime, Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer is expected to make $50 million in its first weekend. Fans posting on social media, they're planning to see both. There's even I Survived Barbenheimer merch for those who can't just have one this weekend. Thanks to Oppenheimer's three-hour runtime, Barbenheimer fans will spend 5 hours at the theater. I'm Lisa Taylor.
I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It is Free Talk Live. You can join the show if you want. We're talking about the CBDC. Is it an inevitability that this is coming to the United States? Well, right now, the answer could still be no. It may not be inevitable, but it sure as hell seems like it. They're spending a lot of money and a lot of time developing potential CBDC, or central bank digital currencies, here in the United States. There has not been a chosen winner. There's different technician types. MIT, for instance, is involved in the research, so there's a lot riding on this. It seems like something that's going to be happening, but it hasn't yet been authorized, so it's still not a done deal here yet. A lot of eyes are currently on countries like Nigeria and Jamaica, which do have actual what they call retail CBDCs. They're in production, they're available in the marketplace, and not too many people seem that interested in these things. It's Ian, Matt, and Nikki here tonight. We're going to go to your phone calls and thoughts, and then Nikki's going to tell us in a little bit about the haunted town in Connecticut that is apparently illegal to visit. But first, Major Payne is on the line in Michigan. Go ahead, Major.
Well, that sounds intriguing. Yeah, I'm thinking about over a year ago, I filed for Social Security, right? And they sent me my first check. And on the back of the envelope, it said, you must register a bank account with the government for your Social Security checks to arrive promptly and on time or something like that. And then a couple months after that, I started getting notices inside letters. You are in violation or non-compliance or some hoorah. And I'm like, the government does not have the right to demand that I give them a freaking bank account.
Yeah, you are not. You should not be obligated to have a bank account ever.
Right, and I bet you everybody that's getting Social Security, I dare anybody to call in saying they're getting their Social Security and it isn't direct deposit. Because I've been making these bozos send me a check, a paper check, in the mail for over a year now. And guess what? I haven't gotten a call from the feds.
Okay, here's I'm curious, though. What do you do, Major, with the check? If you don't have a bank account to deposit in, can you just go to Walmart or something and get the check cashed?
Well, the last one, I rode around with it in my wallet for a minute, and I was dead broke. I was down in Hubbard Lake, little podunk town. And I went to the party store there, and it's a government check. I got my ID. So they have no, you know, it's not like a two-third party something stupid. They have full faith in it.
So the party store took the, they cashed your check?
Yeah, most anybody that doesn't have some kind of a serious bounce check policy, you know, from doing business in the ghetto and whatnot, is, I mean, this is Northern Michigan. People are honest, basically.
Okay, all right. That's cool.
You know, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but you were talking about the, CBDC, is that what you
said? Yeah, the Central Bank Digital Currency, yep.
Well, that made me think of the CDC. And they just announced here, they're trying to scare the hell out of us. Now the deer got COVID.
Oh, really?
Oh, no
come
kidding.
On.
Yeah, I thought they were done with the COVID thing.
I'm driving down the road tonight, and there's 15, 20 deer grazing in a bean field. And a little fawn starts trying to run out with me, probably trying to catch up with his mama. So I blow the horn a couple, three times, and I look at the herd, and half of them turned and looked at me, and they were wearing funny blue masks. Imagine that.
Thank you, Major. So you're one of the holdouts on this. And what do you say that the percentage is of people who are receiving Social Security who are like you? What do you think?
3%, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you holding out, man, and thanks for calling and sharing the story here tonight. The number is 603-283-6160. Let's change gears into something a little more weird. Nikki, you've got a story tonight about a alleged haunted town.
Yep.
But this isn't just a tourist attraction. In fact, it's the opposite.
Yes.
It's keeping tourists out.
That's true. So there's a haunted town in America that's been entirely abandoned and illegal to visit. Although many things divide or bring people closer together. One thing that almost always invokes an opinion is ghosts.
Whose story is this, by the way?
Where so this is, from? I've found this, one was the, I think it was on the New York Times. This particular one is the Premier Daily.
Okay. Just want to give credit where credit's due.
For some, there's no possible way that ghosts could be real. Meanwhile, others swear that they've been in the presence of one.
Matt in our studio has made that statement many times.
Lots of times.
Yeah.
Either way, it's fun to speculate. However, a haunted town in Connecticut has been deemed to be in such despair that it is illegal to visit. So here's the twisted history of a haunted town. The haunted town in Connecticut has an interesting and complex history that some have speculated dates as far back to the 1500s. However, Dudleytown, Connecticut wasn't settled until the 1740s and 1750s.
Dudleytown.
Dudleytown, yes.
Okay.
Eerily in a valley called Dark Entry Forest. Perhaps a coincidence.
Mm.
Perhaps not. Interestingly, the haunted town was abandoned in the 1800s. Dudleytown was first settled by Thomas Griffiths, who was later joined by Gideon Dudley, hence the name Dudleytown. His family followed shortly after, and by 1753, the Dudleys were on a mission to find a fresh start. So this goes a little bit deeper into the history, just people that were living there. So legend has it, Gideon Dudley fled to America hoping to avoid a longtime family curse after his father was beheaded. Unfortunately, the Dudleys are believed to have been partaking in sort of dark magic, invoking a mythical book thought to open the gates of hell. So a lot of, a lot of story here.
Sounds like Evil Dead or something.
Yeah. As a result, some have speculated they and anyone whom they come into contact with are doomed. Therefore, onlookers attribute the town's numerous unexplainable tragedies to the curse that the Dudleys had so desperately tried to outrun. Though it is short-lived history, the haunted town has a reputation for repeated murders, suicide, or failed businesses.
It is in Connecticut, though, right?
Yes, but this is before Connecticut became Connecticut. This is like colonial Connecticut.
Where do you know where this is? Because when you actually search for it on Google Maps, it doesn't come up.
Because it's not a real town. So it's a real place, but it's not a town listed.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what county it's in. One of the articles I read.
There is a Dudley Town Hill, which is apparently a mountain or a hill or something.
So this is in the northwestern
This is by
area
Cornwall.
Of Connecticut, yes.
So it's by Cornwall?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So there's apparently a Dudley Town Hill.
You know, there's all kinds of dead towns all over New England. I mean, there's, you know.
But my thing is, where is this place? Because I'm pretty familiar with Connecticut. I have a lot of friends in Connecticut, in that region, too. So I'm wondering, like, a lot of people don't even know this exists. So you would think that someone would have stumbled upon it. Maybe it's deep in the forest, just kind of covered
by
trees.
Grown over.
Yeah, because at this point, you know, there's houses there and, you know, old structures there, but it's pretty much just what you would envision, abandoned, run down.
Are there pictures of this place in the in the article?
There are, yeah.
All right.
So while there are countless unexplained phenomena, a few of the most interesting include a family who all faced sudden doom after their relative, Nathaniel Carter, moved to Dudley Town. Six of his relatives died of cholera, and the rest were killed upon fleeing town and settling in New York. Meanwhile, another resident, William Tanner, is rumored to have been plagued by creatures coming out of the woods at night.
Oh, man.
Nearly 50 years later, General Herman Swift lost his wife when she was unexpectedly struck by lightning.
Now we're in the 1800s now, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's said that the grief-stricken general died shortly after. With more and more strange reportings, death, and failed businesses, the town had become virtually abandoned by the year 1900.
Okay.
In contrast, 1920s brought about a potential glimmer of positivity for the desolate and seemingly haunted town. Philanthropists began using the land to reforest after decades of agricultural use that had damaged the soil. Although it's still used for that purpose today, the town's reputation took another bizarre turn. In the 1970s, the seemingly haunted town's reputation took another bizarre turn. They repeat themselves a lot, like the phrasing. Anyways, declared demonically possessed in the 1700s. That's just the way that was phrased. So I guess somebody is claiming that the town is possessed by demons.
Okay.
However, the potential glimmer of light, Dr. William Clark stumbled upon it in 1918 and deemed it an ideal vacation home. Oddly, his wife also reported creatures in the forest. This pivotal moment seems... So this is interesting, right? So we're spanning like 300 years, and we're getting a lot of the same stories, you know, a lot of mishappenings, creatures coming out of the forest...
I mean, creatures do live in the forest. That's not unusual.
But a lot of people...
Are we talking about monsters? Are we talking about Bigfoot?
That's a good question, right?
You know,
so typically, you know, in colonial times, I'm assuming a lot of the people, I mean, this area was pretty rural.
Yeah,
so
I'm sure they were pretty well-versed in the natural wildlife that they were
using. So they wouldn't have called a bear a creature?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, or they wouldn't have been startled by it, I would think. Okay. And even nowadays, I mean, if I see a bear, I might be like, whoa, a bear!
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to be like... horrified and like we gotta move.
Sure.
So but yes. Okay. So
creatures were coming out of the forest within the last 100
years. And then it kind of goes into, so the reason why it's illegal to visit there is because of the conservation efforts. So it's not because it's so horrifyingly haunted that people just can't be there.
Mm-hmm. Or
but it's for who knows? Or some weird stuff could be going on that the state is involved. I don't know.
I'll tell you what, as a hardcore Bigfoot researcher,
maybe they live there.
The government is always associated, like black Chevy Tahoes are always associated with, like, Bigfoot reports and things like that.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
So, and then I was also going to say, in one of the articles I read about this, even though it's illegal to visit there, of course you get teenagers that, you know, they're gonna, they stumble upon it, they're gonna go see it.
Go there, get high, you know.
So, yeah, whatever, go. Everybody loves a good, or I don't want to say everybody, but a lot of teenagers love a good haunted house.
Haunted house, sure, yeah. It's
make
spooky.
It an entire haunted town that's been abandoned, mm-hmm. even better. So a lot of the people that have gone there have reported, like, phantom hands touching them on the back, or, like, a very eerie presence, like, they're, you know, like, they're being grabbed or they're being watched. So,
but I mean, to play modern day devil's advocate or the skeptic here, and that's not to say that I don't believe that there could be alternative, you know, phenomena and things like that, because a lot of things we just don't know about, right? Like, there's more things under the sun than you've envisioned in your philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was Plato or whoever that said that. I know I'm butchering the statement, but there's obviously a lot we don't yet understand. It doesn't mean it's supernatural; it just means it's natural and we haven't figured it out yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm not gonna deny these things, but you know, for instance, if you see a spider, right, and whether it's crawling up you or somebody else or whatever, all of a sudden now you feel the spider crawling up you, right? Like, who hasn't had this experience?
Yeah.
Even though there's not actually a spider on you, right? Like, it was just your hair moving in the breeze and it brushed across you, or it was
just your
mind.
Yeah.
And so if you're in a place that's sort of known for being haunted, it's not unbelievable to have the idea that their mind is just envisioning these things
that
aren't actually occurring.
And I know with myself especially, if I'm freaked out, then I will start to kind of, you know, get that, like, spooky feeling where it's like, you know, you're thinking things are behind the mm-hmm. door and you're just waiting for something to maybe jump out at you, or you're waiting for something to happen because maybe I watched a horror movie or something.
Or
so
maybe there's something behind the door waiting to jump out at you. Or maybe.
Maybe.
Who knows?
You know, there's a story that we talk about. I talk about UFOs all the time, and mm-hmm. people talk about, well, you know, how come, you know, I look at the sky all the time. How come I've never seen a UFO? Well, I don't think humans see a lot of things. I think if your brain isn't already programmed to understand that, I think your brain just tunes it right out mm-hmm. to the point where it'll just copy and paste some blue sky over the UFO, mm-hmm. which is blatant right there.
A lot
of the best photographs of UFOs ever taken have been taken by soccer moms taking pictures of their kids
they didn't
even know games
it.
And
they,
yeah,
they
and there it is in the sky, and they didn't see it when they were taking the picture, but it's clearly right there. And one old adage, and I don't know how true this is, but there's a story where there was a native on the shore in Central South America a long time ago, and he saw ripples coming in from his typically sheet of glass calm bay where mm-hmm. they used to like to collect, you know, sea fish and shells and things like that, and, you know, shellfish and things. And he couldn't figure out where the ripples were coming from. So he went to town and he got the medicine man, the wise man, and he came down and saw the ripples and contemplated the ripples and followed them back to where they were supposed to be and just concentrated on the spot where they were emanating from. And into his vision came three large sailing ships, which they had no type of reference for until then.
Right.
And when the wise man said, there are three giant boats out there with giant masts, look, they're right there. At that point, the townspeople who started congregating mm-hmm. started to be able to see them as well. So, you know, I spent my whole life wanting to see a UFO, and I never did. And then when I finally did, the floodgates opened. I've seen tons of UFOs. And these are verified. I'm not an idiot. I know what an airplane looks like, and I know what a blimp looks like. This is not that.
So, and what you're talking about, it does make sense because we have a very limited amount of light that we can see. So
that's
when you come across the whole color spectrum or the whole spectrum of light, where our vision is very limited.
Mm-hmm.
Other animals can see a lot more mm-hmm. than we can. You know, same with hearing. You know, cats and dogs get a lot more. Their range of frequencies is a lot larger than ours, or just different than ours. When you're using your vision, I forget what the percentage is, but you're only actually seeing a percentage of what you're looking around at. It's very small. And the rest of it is your brain making up the rest as you either remember things or as it makes sense to you. So it is very possible that there are a lot of other things going on here that we can't see. I mean, even think of radio waves or frequencies or...
The visible light spectrum is very, very small.
Yeah, you hear my voice, but you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But is it maybe possible that you could see it if you had your full, like the full range of vision?
Have you ever seen, I don't know what the experiment is called, but have you ever seen where they visualize sound frequencies by putting like sand on top of a speaker?
Yeah, or they'll do it with water.
Yeah, water as well, yeah. But and they'd like, they tune to just one tone, right? Like one 20 hertz tone or whatever it is, right? And then the sand just reorganizes itself into a pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like a very specific visible pattern.
It's so cool.
It's crazy.
I mean, they've even done a similar test. It was a Japanese...
you're talking about the frozen water.
The water.
Yes, the frozen water. So that wasn't even just sound. I mean,
that's
was
with
just,
intention, right? Like,
yeah, that was thinking about, you know, like, I'm happy and I'm looking at this water, mm-hmm. and then you freeze it, and then it the way it looked.
Well, he was actually speaking to the water.
Yeah.
He was telling one batch of water really sweet, loving things as it was freezing, and he was telling the other batch of water really abusive, terrible, negative things.
And the way it looked... correlated.
Yeah, the crystalline structure of the of the freezing of the pleasant water was pleasant to look at and very pretty crystalline structure, and the crystalline structure of the negatively charged ice was really jagged and upside down and backwards and really not healthy looking ice.
Yeah, well, that's why I said before, there's a lot more to this whole experience that we don't even know, and that just normal observation isn't going to pick up on. So, was there any more about this haunted town?
Not really anything that's relevant.
Like,
it does go into, like, a lot of the, you know, it goes into...
Does it go into any of the stories any deeper, or is it just sort of like, oh, so-and-so's wife died, and this other person's business failed? And it's like, those things together, at least at the level of detail that they're giving, aren't exactly like, well, yeah, that's ghosts. Or, I mean, there's not a lot really to go on there. Like Matt said, I mean, it's Connecticut. You're in the woods in Connecticut in the 1700s. Of course, there's a good chance your business is going to fail or you're going to catch cholera or whatever.
There are a few other cases of people, you know, William Tanner dying suddenly. And then before he died, he was rumored to have become obsessed with speaking about the creatures coming out of the woods at night.
Mm.
A claim also echoed by his neighbor. So it's a lot of like similar stories from just different people. And for whatever reason, I work night shift, so I have sometimes a lot of time on my hands.
Mm-hmm.
So this was just something that piqued my interest, and I started reading all of these articles, and I'm
sure
watching
it wasn't
YouTube
in Fitzwilliam,
videos.
Because you know, in Fitzwilliam, we had creatures coming out of the woods at night.
I'm sure it happens a lot of places.
And I was actually hit by lightning in Fitzwilliam when I was laying in bed, right?
Did I do believe that certain areas are hot spots.
I do too.
They're charged. Mm-hmm. They're hot spots for activity. You know, sometimes you hear about the theory that a lot of those large cathedrals are the really, really old, holy places.
Yeah, they're sitting on top
they're sitting on top of this really, really densely charged, energetic, and I don't even know how people measure this. I don't know if it's a magnetic thing. I have no clue, but it seems like, from what I've heard, there's real scientific ways to measure that these places are just really densely charged, energetic zones, and that's where certain, like the pyramids... certain really old churches and cathedrals and other holy places. So it just seems like a strange coincidence. And I'm sure there's other places like that, maybe not as intense, but I'm sure there are places like that around New Hampshire and around the U.S.
Yeah, there's weird esoteric stuff out there that, you know, not a lot of people know about. And you mentioned the pyramids and other places like in South America, temples and things like that. Like there's old societies or whatever from way back in ancient times that, and I'm not by no means am I an expert. If Bonnie were here, she would know more about like where I think some of these things are, but they've seen very similar symbolism and things like that, like inscribed in completely different parts of the world.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and
where
back then,
and the inscriptions are like centuries and centuries and millennia.
Yeah, there's
old.
No way those yeah. people could have known one another. Exactly. They weren't traveling across the oceans. Yeah,
there's certain like monolithic. There was a culture of monolithic building where nobody really knows how they carved the rocks and nobody knows how they moved the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And they bear telltale signs of the same technology, whether it's in India or Japan or Europe or Egypt or South America or North America. So it's like, there was clearly a worldwide culture. There had to be a worldwide culture because they were all using the same exact technology, and we still can't figure it out now.
Yeah, it's really interesting to speculate, and I like to keep an open mind when it comes to stuff like this, because sure. I'm not going to pretend like I know, because no one could really know any of these things,
yeah,
right?
The most honest thing you can say is, all I know is I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what I always say in regards to religion
science,
and anything like that, yeah.
Science just says it knows. Well, do you really know?
You know, and science is always changing, you know, with experiments and...
Well, that's... The original science.
Yeah, now the science,
is settled.
Yeah.
They're done with that whole calling out other hypotheses or theses and, you know, disproving them.
I think it's just the science that the state pays for, the state-funded mm-hmm. science. And they. Yeah,
there's a lot of money on this science.
Yeah.
It's a religion is what it is. It's a
absolutely.
New religion. I like what you were saying before about not being able to see a certain thing, even though it's there. And Bonnie and I were just talking about this. I think the easiest way to understand that is, like, you get a new car or you become aware of a specific model of car that you're interested in, and then all of a sudden it appears,
yep.
right? Like,
that's
all of
true.
A sudden it's all over the roads.
It's on your radar.
You never noticed it before, even though they were there. It just didn't pop out like it does. And then, of course, you look at movies like They Live, which is a classic John Carpenter film from the 1980s,
awesome
where
flick.
When the dude puts on the glasses, all of a sudden he can see the way things really are. And another variant on that is a movie called Interstate 60 that came out maybe like a decade and a half ago. And it's a really excellent movie that's, you know, a little more recent. And similarly, the main character becomes able to see things that were there, but were just beyond his conception of reality. And then once he can see it, you can't go back.
But a lot of people are very absorbed in whatever it is they're doing, you mm-hmm. know, and even if it, you know, the like the daughter's soccer game, you're taking a picture of your kid, you're very absorbed in that moment.
Right.
And there's a lot going on all of the time.
Right.
So it's impossible to even tune into everything that's happening around you. You know, it's impossible.
I mean, you can take some mushrooms, and then you can sort of change your tune a little bit.
Yeah.
You can experience things a little differently. Maybe open your receptors a little bit, but even then, you still can't. You still can't see it all. Out of time for tonight, and we will be back tomorrow. I think Jay Noon will be joining us for another live episode of Free Talk Live at that time. And thanks, guys, for joining me on
great show.
Your first Free Talk Live.
It's nice
together.
To be on as the white husband and wife. Right?
Yeah. All right, out of time tonight. Join us online in the meantime at freetalklive.com. Social.freetalklive.com for our social site.
Radio. Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or injured at work, you have rights and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the Legal Helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.